Well, let's just read that Bible passage from Matthew 2, 1 to 12. Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his stars that rose and we've come to worship him." King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, "Where is the Messiah supposed to be born?" "In Bethlehem in Judea," they said, "for this is what the prophet wrote, 'You, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you who will be the shepherd for my people Israel.'" Then Herod called for a private meeting with the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. He told them, "Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. And when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too." After this interview, the wise men went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, today's officially called the Day of Epiphany, the 12th day of Christmas. The word Epiphany means revelation, and this day was originally set aside for celebrating the fact that Jesus, the Messiah, had been revealed to the Gentiles. To the wise men were the first non-Jews to see Jesus. We don't know exactly when it happened, but we do know it happened sometime after, you know, the events in the stable. And so although we sort of squash it all down into the one picture, so we've got the shepherds and the wise men and the manger, in fact, it was, you know, sometime afterwards. It says that in the thing there that they were living in a house, and also that it describes Jesus not as a baby but as a child. So Jesus at this stage was, could have been several months, maybe as old as 2 years old. And what I find interesting about this story is that just as the shepherds were the least likely people in Israel to actually have a revelation of the Messiah, they were considered unclean because of their jobs, they were considered untrustworthy, so that I think they weren't allowed to give evidence in trials of in court cases, because shepherds, everybody knows the shepherds were liars, and they were just, you know, the people that were just ceremonially unclean all the time, far from God, and yet they were the first people in Israel to see Jesus. And the first Gentiles, let's look at them, they were obviously foreigners, they were pagans, they were astrologers, they were the sorts of people that we would say could not be Christians, and yet they were the first people to come and worship Jesus from outside of Israel. They were people of great discipline. They saw this star, they knew what it represented, and they decided to go on a pilgrimage to find out who this king was. And, it might have taken them a few weeks to get their act together, to get to a place where they could leave what they were doing, and it would have taken several months for them to cross from one country into Israel. So they were focused on a task. They were focused on Jesus. Secondly, they brought offerings. Their trip was costly, it was risky, but they also brought huge gifts for Jesus. And thirdly, it says they worshipped him. And so they recognised that they were in the presence of somebody who was greater than they were, and they bowed down and worshipped him. And to be wise in the biblical sense, we need to have that similar sort of attitude, focused on Jesus, costly surrender to him, and thirdly, constant worship of him. So that was the sermon I prepared. I would have fleshed that out a lot more. But this morning God said he wanted me to preach an alternative sermon. And I'm not even sure that this is coherent or hangs together well, so if it doesn't make a lot of sense, don't worry too much about that. I suppose the linkage with the wise men is this, that we are the Gentiles whom God has called us to worship him, and we're all called to do that. We're all called to be worshippers. We're all called to be disciples. We're all called to be followers of Jesus. And we're all called to be vessels of the Holy Spirit. In Acts chapter 2, where's Acts? There. The event of Pentecost was seen as something powerful, and something unique, something different to what God had done in the past. And Acts chapter 2:17, Peter's explaining what's been happening, and he quotes the prophet Joel, and he says, "In the last days, God says, I'll pour out my spirit upon all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy, your young men will see visions, your old men will dream dreams. In those days I'll pour out my spirit, even on my servants, men and women alike, and they will prophesy." So the thing about living in a post-Pentecost world is that everybody who's a follower of Jesus has the Holy Spirit. So hands up if you're a follower of Jesus. Got a few here? Right. You are full of the Holy Spirit. You are called to be carriers of God's grace. When Jesus gave the Great Commission, he gave it to all disciples. So when he said, Matthew 28, go into all the world and make disciples. I just had a mental block then. Couldn't remember how it started. Go into all the world and make disciples of all people. He wasn't just addressing 12 people, 11 people. He was addressing all his disciples. We are to go into all the world and make disciples. And now your part of the world that you might be called to might be Narrabri, or it might be India, or it might be somewhere else. But part of the calling is that you are called to make disciples, and God has given you the Holy Spirit to enable you to do that. So we're all called. That was the first point. The second point is this, that we're all minister. In the past, there's been like a de facto priesthood where the talented man of God stands in front of everybody else and tells them what to do. And then he basically gets to do all the ministry. But that's not the way it's meant to be. God has not generated a whole bunch of spectators with a few gifted people. Yes, some people have, you know, the ministry gifts of apostle, evangelist, teacher, pastor, or prophet. But we're all called to be ministers of the gospel. We're all called to be people who impart the Holy Spirit to one another. You know, when you see people like, picking names at random, Joyce Meyer, or that guy with the white coat, not having a good time of it this morning remembering names, or, you know, even Keith Bates, who's much less famous, you're not supposed to all sit around watching them do their stuff. And when you hear of some guy who has a great healing ministry, like that guy from Australia, gosh, name's just not there. There's a guy from Queensland who travels around CAC churches a bit. Really nice guy. But we're not just supposed to see that happen and say, oh, well, that's pretty cool, God can use him. What we're supposed to say is, wow, isn't that cool? And the same Holy Spirit that's in him is in me. Therefore, I should be healing the sick and raising the dead and all that stuff. But somehow we've turned it around and we've made it a spectator thing. So, you know, you all get to come, you pay your money for the show. We put on the show, give you a bit of teaching and then send you home. And we're right till next Sunday. That's not the way it's meant to be. There was a time when that was the way it was because, you know, people generally couldn't read and write. So they couldn't read the scriptures. And generally people didn't have much of an education. And so the guy at the front, who was called the priest, was the one guy in the village who could read the scriptures and interpret it. But even then, in the Middle Ages, the intention of God was that that guy at the front, the priest, would equip the others so that they would then go off and pray and heal the sick and raise the dead and do all that stuff. But somehow the default position in Christianity is that one guy does it and everybody else watches it, but God's default is we all do it. We all go and raise the sick. And there's a couple of reasons... Raise the sick. Well, yeah, they might need raising. There's a couple of reasons for this that I thought of. One is fear, that if you're all running around praying for people to get healed and raising the dead and all that stuff and doing all this stuff willy-nilly as the Spirit leads, well, you might sort of do something wrong. And if you're doing it where I can't see you, well, you know, gosh, who knows what you might get up to. And we want it all done decently and in order and leave plenty of room for people to fall asleep. So that's why churches tend to have these informal controls on other people. The second thing is there's a poverty spirit, not about resources, but about the Holy Spirit. And so we think that only a few gifted people can receive the Holy Spirit, and so we better let them do it, whereas what's actually meant to happen is that we've all received the Holy Spirit and we should all be doing it. But, you know, how can God's Spirit be so widely spread over so many people? That's what we don't understand. How can God use somebody like me, of all people? Well, the Holy Spirit's being poured out on all flesh, young and old, men and women, and every one of you has a portion of the Holy Spirit. Every one of you has been called, and Jesus is telling you, you must go minister in my name. You are called to preach, maybe, you know, not at the front in front of 40 or 50 people or several thousand people, but God has called you to take the gospel to the nation, the nations. You have been called to pray and intercede, and it shouldn't be just one or two people interceding. It should be all of us. And you are called to minister. And part of our normal life as Christians should be, if we find out that somebody's sick, then we should be praying for them. If we find out that somebody's in need, we should be meeting that need. If we find out that somebody doesn't know Jesus, then we should be taking the trouble to introduce them to him. Now, part of this thing that's sort of burning in me is that, and this is point three, if you like, it's about being, not doing. I have been part of equipping courses and training courses, and, you know, I used to be a person that trained other people to share the gospel one-on-one, and it was a very effective course. And you can go to a million different training courses to learn how to do witnessing, how to do evangelism. But God never actually called us to do that. What Jesus said was, "You shall be my witnesses." So it's out of our being, out of our relationship with God, that the evangelism takes place. It's out of our walk with God. People see Jesus in us. And that's what we should be aiming for. That's what we should be aspiring to, is that we are just so close to Jesus, so full of the Holy Spirit, so knowing of God, that in everything we do, it oozes out of us. You know, in the same way that I can talk about my wife because I know her so well, we should know Jesus so well that love for him and talking of him just flows out of us. You shouldn't need to be taught how to do evangelism. You shouldn't be taught, need to know how to pray for the sick. Our relationship with God should be what causes that to just flow out of us as a part of who we are. The spiritual gifts, the knowledge of God, the ability to witness and to see miracles take place flows out of our relationship with God, with Jesus, with the Holy Spirit. And I think that's part of what I said earlier about needing more reverential worship, that we don't need so much to know the techniques and the secrets of spiritual warfare or evangelism or whatever it is, stick your favourite thing in there. But our worship of God, our knowledge of God, our relationship with Jesus changes who we are to such an extent that we can't help but go and do this stuff. You know, you're walking down the street and the Holy Spirit says, you know, pray for that person. You just do it. Rosina talked about seeing the faces of the people that God has called us to pray for. That comes out of a relationship with Jesus. And that's what we need to be pursuing. That's what those wise men pursued. That, you know, they devoted months and months and months to this one task of seeing Jesus. We have a lifetime in which we need to be doing that. And our relationship with Jesus then oozes out of all that we do. Okay, that's the end of the sermon.